All right, we are plugged in and ready to rock and roll. And it's Saturday, the 2nd of July. Oh, my goodness, can you believe it's got time's flying by, huh? You're blinking, it's another month. But you're listening to the Crass Files podcast with Adam and author researcher Scott Howard is plugging in with me today to talk about his book, The Transgender Industrial Complex. And it's going to be a great chat today. Scott's looking after his little one there. And Scott's coming in from the US, which is fantastic. And it's good that we can connect, buddy, and talk about your amazing book and such an important book. And everything's up on my website, crassfiles.com. Contact me through there and enjoy, folks. Lots going up, and I'll put Scott's book up in the in our book slider there too on the website, so you can have a look at that as we move forward here. Thanks to the members. You guys are awesome. All our social media links are there as well, including our chat over in Telegram. So get over there. Scott, busy. You're busy, man. But as you just said before, it's good you've already got that book out, because you've got a little one now, and that requires all of our attention, doesn't it? But it's a wonderful moment in life, and it's just great to plug in with you today and chat about your book. I heard you on with Lana, and that was a great show as well, with the Red Ice guys there. So that was a really good podcast, and what you guys were covering, I was sitting here nodding my head as well. So I shared that, and I know a lot of people enjoyed that, and I wanted to reach out to you and get you on. And the guys at Antelope Hill over on Twitter just let me know your email there, which is really cool. And here you are to chat about the book. How's everything going, buddy?
Yeah, absolutely. It's going great. And I've got a little Werewolf Junior here with me. So if the listeners hear any sort of cooing in the background or anything like that, that's chiming in. So that was a great podcast. It was pretty amazing that they were able to have me on, and a lot of people actually were saying that I was being a little overly dramatic as far as basically just having them disguise my voice. And what I think a lot of people don't realize is that I was actually being essentially targeted at the time that the book came out. I had threats of violence against me on Twitter. I was actually ended up being banned from Twitter. The book was banned from Amazon. There were a lot of things going on. So I really stuck my neck out there with that book. And it was pretty incredible that the Antelope Hill folks were willing to take a chance on me. That was the first original title that they had published. And, they had my back on that one. And, out of an abundance of caution, I was, I said, let's see if we can't disguise the voice. And things have kind of cooled off a little bit. So I'm a little more comfortable, with my Alex Jones voice, as some people have said. I sound like Alex Jones, which I find quite amusing. It's a distinctive voice. So I said, all right, well, I'm going to try to kind of alter it, at least at first, till this kind of blows over. Because it was crazy. There were threads of, thousands of people on Twitter kind of saying, who is this guy? And we've got to get the book banned. And he's saying all these terrible things. And, there was a review published of it on, I believe it was Medium, the day the book released. And I know for a fact that this person was not someone we had sent an advance copy to. So they clearly had not read the book and were attacking me based on a review of the book from someone who had read the book that they read, and they didn't like the reviewer. And so by extension, they were kind of mapping that on to me. And it was just very bizarre and kind of whirlwind, but clearly I touched a nerve with it.
I bet you did. it's a heavy issue, and there's not many, especially authors, who are willing to write in this way. So, I can understand that. Is your book still up on Amazon?
That one is not. That one, Amazon did ban it.
I couldn't find it.
My follow-up is called The Open Society Playbook, and that, as of now, is still up on Amazon. And that kind of gets into more of the sort of open borders type stuff, the Soros stuff that a lot of people are familiar with, and how they kind of go about doing that. And, you know, it was rather prescient, I think, because I talked quite a bit about things that were going on in Ukraine. And, you know, obviously I had no way of knowing there was going to be a war. But I spent quite a bit of time talking about the efforts, you know, of Soros and his open society to kind of bring that country into the Western orbit and Western, you know, the leadership of the West, obviously not, you know, the people that the interests of the leadership are quite divergent from the people themselves. I don't know, maybe people just don't have the same knee-jerk response to that, but that one is still up there. But yeah, the transgender industrial complex was banned, and of course had the Streisand effect because it made the book an even bigger hit because it had that little sheen of being, I guess, dangerous about it. So, you know, I guess I'll take it.
That's right. Well, it says here, yeah, you're basically pulling the mask off the complex network of these groups who are behind the transgender agenda. And we have it, of course, here in Australia, don't we? Pretty big. And something that we've been going through here for quite a long time now. So I've always posted about it and put a lot of stuff up on the website. And so it's good to connect with you and talk about this book a little bit. You know, we can't do too much in podcasts. But, you know, going back with Lana and those guys, I did speak to her ages ago. And that was up on my YouTube channel, but they deleted that, and Facebook, all that got deleted here. And that was one of the podcasts I lost because I didn't back it up. I don't think it's on my website. I'll try and look for it for the folks, but one of those things, I was just silly. I was, when I first started, I was uploading podcasts to YouTube and they deleted everything up there. So just over on BitChute and all that now, which is going better. You rebuild. That's okay. We just keep moving forward as they do this. But I can imagine this is a book that might get you in a little bit of heat, but it's good that things have simmered off a little bit now, and that the book's going well, which is fantastic. Why don't we start a little bit, because this is very interesting that you've done something like this to look at behind the mask. I like that because no one's really been willing to do that. How did this come about? How did this fall into place for you to want to do a book in the first place? Was it something that just bubbled up inside you about what is going on here and how people are being fooled, you know, to follow this system? And did you just sort of say, a book's the best thing that I can do at this time, something that I'm good at, I want to do this? Because we're always encouraging people here to do what you do best. I like doing podcasting and my website. Others are good at other things. Is this how it happened for you over time? And you just thought, I'm gonna do this book. It's just too much going on in my head because it is such a big issue, but it's a pulverizing issue as well. How did it all fall into place for you originally to start on the book, even? Because I don't know how. It'd be just so hard to write a book for me. I think I'd jump out a window. But you've done a fantastic job there.
Yeah, well, thank you very much. I really appreciate it. And yeah, it took quite a bit of time. I had seen a few things where people were talking about it, but no one had really gone into the genesis of it. Where did it come from? What was the history of it? How did it gain such traction and become such a thing? Because it sort of came out of left field about a decade ago, right? And so I was comparing notes with a friend of mine who's another dissident author. He doesn't want to be named, so I won't say. But he was actually talking about maybe going into writing about it, and he gave me some of his notes. And, you know, I was looking at some of the stuff I had done, and he thought I could do a good job with it. So I sat down, and, you know, I pretty much just more or less went into seclusion to write it. It took me quite a while. I mean, the book is very, very dense. But I felt like I had to do that in such granular detail to show people just how much institutional support this has. You know, it feels like they want it to feel like it's a grassroots movement in the same way I talk about with the open society stuff, you know, which includes obviously the transgender aspect. But it's not. You know, these are major financiers who seed money out to a number of different organizations. And, you know, it truly is global. And one of the things I wanted to do in that book was not just focus on the United States, although, you know, a lot of the money originates out of the United States towards this issue, because that's where, you know, along with the City of London, a few other places, sort of high finance kind of operates out of. But, you know, I talk about Australia in the book. I talk about Andorra. I talk about Germany. I talk about Canada. I talk about, you know, a lot of these countries, a lot of countries in Asia where this is being pushed. And it truly is a global phenomenon, and it is being orchestrated by a relatively small number of people who are generally pretty well set financially, as the case is actually with most of these issues that we would recognize as being, you know, corrosive for regular people. And I go into the book about how it would not have happened if they had not pushed this very warped idea of feminism, essentially first to get women into the labor force as basically taxable and depress wages, but also to really start to undermine the family and convince women that their sort of empowerment was to be basically a sort of a poor copy of a man rather than complementary, you know, each able to do things that the other maybe does not excel at, or, you know, in some cases cannot do. And also the fact that the whole sort of quote unquote gay rights thing basically had to happen as well on top of that. And a lot of the same energy was sort of funneled into that. And this is sort of under the umbrella of progressivism, which includes a lot of the, you know, so-called refugee stuff and whatnot. And a lot of it's the same organizations funding all of it, actually. Like I mentioned, Soros, you know, he's kind of a bogeyman. But for good reason. I spent billions of dollars globally pushing this stuff. And a lot of times they actually explicitly try to link all of these issues together. It's sort of you're on board with all of it, or you know, you dissent on one point and they target you, as we're seeing with a lot of these, you know, a lot of the feminists really actually have had this experience with the trans thing. But I wanted to illustrate. You know, I have some chapters that are dedicated to specific countries, you know, one that's purely to the United Kingdom and et cetera. But, you know, it was a pretty much, at least in the U.S., a very seamless handoff. You know, the so-called gay marriage was passed. And 2 weeks later, you had, you know, Bruce Jenner on the cover of Vanity. I think it was Vanity Fair or Vogue, one of those, you know, within 2 weeks. So it was like, OK, on to the next thing. And as I discuss in the book, actually, Australia was one of the earliest places where this ideology and the infrastructure for sort of pushing it came out. So it actually, I mean, it sort of found its form in the United States, but actually the articulated idea comes out of actually Weimar Germany. And from there kind of finds a home in the U.S. But by the 1970s, you know, it's been a while since I've done the research. I can't remember if it's the late 60s or the 70s. It's already got a foothold in Australia. So it's actually been it's a relatively recent phenomenon. But the first sort of pushes along those lines, you can see quite a few decades ago already. You know, but very much a marginal thing until the last probably decade or so in most places.
Yeah. Yeah. It's been it's been pushed here to the extremes. I've tracked it quite a lot too. And it's a shame that a lot of people are, as I said, being they're falling under the spell of this, you know, thinking that they're part of a gang, thinking they're part of something bigger, you know, to do something good, because it is always that sort of option for the system, isn't it? That it's that we're all in this together, and so it gets people up and into that kind of system where they think they're doing a good thing, and they don't understand that there's a beast, you know, behind this, running it, and it's not what you think it is. But it's swept so many up in Australia as well. Yeah, we've had a lot of very sinister and creepy programs here going through the years that I've posted on the website, and I think the good thing is, you know, the parents have been onto it here. we're not a hugely populated country. You know, we're 25 million people, and sometimes when these sorts of things happen, communities and parents will be onto things. So, you know, that's been pretty good. They've recognized the threat and going through the schools with a lot of this in the curriculums, and they've seen that this is not good. It's a threat against our children, and they've stood up. So, and we've got, you know, believe it or not, there's actually good, you know, even political figures through the government, more hard-lined, that are keeping an eye on this as well, but it just keeps shifting and changing and changing its names like Soros does. They've got sort of an umbrella with God knows how many groups and organizations with different names, nice-sounding names under it, and they implement all this into the schools. It's like a big bag of lollies, you know, and you think that sounds really nice. One here was called Safe Schools. They implemented Safe Schools in Australia. And they pushed it all around the country. And when we found out what it was horrific, you know. These people were Marxists. They were pushing a pedophile agenda. All of this in the schools and all this terrible material that we exposed and started getting bigger and rolled on. Then they took it all down. It was only Victoria, I think, which is the worst, to try and champion it. But we all found out about it, and it got all taken apart, but it comes back again, and they rename it. But it's all about getting this ideology and in this particular set of curriculums into the schools in front of the children. And you're wondering, where's all this material coming from? Who's putting it into the schools through the teachers, and the teachers are being kind of re-educated in such a way to say that this material's okay, you know, that you got, you know, that's teaching all this terrible, you know, LGBTQ and propaganda and stuff through them, you know, and it's up to the sort of the kids, a lot of the kids now, to either take a photo or to, you know, to yell out and tell their parents. So we have been seeing a bit of that. So, you know, it is very insidious, this, indeed, which is I know it's in your book as well. And I know that it's happening in the US because we've been posting that as well. You know, the drag queens in the schools and all this, it's like a war, against our children, particularly in the schools. And I don't think enough parents are understanding this. They're putting little Jimmy in the school in the day they're going to work or whatever, or out, and they're not understanding what's being presented to those children in the day, you know. They don't have enough reach into the school. They're changing the schools now. So if you're a parent, you're kind of more locked out for the day. You're not so much allowed in there, you know. It's big bars and stuff. Kind of like an open-air prison to me. And so this is an insidious practice. And I think my idea always is if our children in society are under threat, then, you know, I got to get my baseball bat. Or, you know, we got to get the lanterns and the pitchforks out. Because as a society, we can't allow that in any way, shape, or form. And that's why we want to promote books like yours and scream it out at the rooftops. Because anyone who tries to stop us, well, we know who they are and what their agenda is then. Because anyone goes after our children and we allow that as a society, what does that say about us, you know, to future generations as well? Because any society that allows their children to be attacked in this way, then that's not a society I want to live in. You know, this is something that is happening, and it's pretty scary. And as I said, in the United States, I've tracked it as well. They're getting them in the schools very early, not just with the curriculum, as I said, but now they're bringing in, you know, it's really in your face with the story hours, with the drag queens. And a lot of people see that here and they say, that's a joke, right? Like that's a psyop. And I'm like, I don't think so. It seems to be happening all over the US. I think they might be trying it a little bit here, but as soon as they do, there's too much of a blow up and everyone makes a big drama about it. So they back off a little bit, but it seems to be running a bit wild in the US, Scott. So what's your thoughts there on that and the schooling system and this curriculum and how insidious is so insidious? It's sort of like a dark tide, isn't it? They kind of ebbs and flows. And when you expose it, it goes away and you forget, and they're back trying to get your kids again. They're like animals in the night.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think that's just it. You know, I go into this, you know, a few things actually to a few points you brought up. You know, at one point in 2019, listeners may or may not be aware of this, but there was a public library drag queen story hour, hosting a drag queen story hour in Washington State, and actually there were some people who were going to protest it, and actually the police stationed snipers on the roof of the library. So this has institutional support. So of course, you know, the police won't intervene when you know, neighborhoods are being burned down and whatever for you know, so-called racial justice. But you know, they'll send snipers, or they'll call you a domestic terrorist if you protest. Heck, if you not even protest, we go to a school board meeting, right? It's really gotten out of control in this country. And you know, I mean, if you look at the, I mean, all you have to look at is the grotesquery known as Rachel Levine, who's our assistant secretary for health, and going on about, you know, transgender affirming care and, you know, all these things. And I think the U.S., our current regime is much is pretty much all in, you know, in pushing these things. And yeah, some are worse than others. Canada, you know, Canada and its schooling, in the U.S. and in our schooling, and there's a few others that I think are particularly bad. But we even see, you know, as I talk about in the book, I mean, even the Australian government, you know, is on board with this stuff. So, you know, I talk about the International Lesbian, Gay, Bisexual, Trans, and Intersex Association, their World, ILGA World branch. They've got a couple different ones. You know, the Australian government, Department of Foreign Affairs and Trade, for whatever reason, is funding them. And I also talk about in the book, more particularly when it comes to the schooling system, the Safe School Coalition, right?
That's it.
That's the one. And it went down. It was with the pushback. It was shuttered.
Rose Ward.
Yes. And that they actually over in New Zealand, the Ministry of Education is giving suggestions for schools and teachers with their LGBT IQA plus students, is how they call it, for trying to develop particular school plans. But yeah, it's if memory serves, I think it's the third chapter of the book. It goes into all the different ways in which schools across the globe, school systems across the globe, are sort of being transformed to push this ideology, because they understand if you get them young, it's much easier to indoctrinate them. I mean, it's no different than, you know, any other type of sort of indoctrination campaign. It's particularly insidious, obviously, because it's not just quote unquote just physical. It's not quote unquote just psychological. It's both. But yeah. It's extremely insidious. And I was very encouraged while I was researching the Safe Schools Coalition that there was such pushback that it was shut down. In a lot of places, you just see constant permissiveness. Yes, I talk about in Iceland, you know, people were charged with hate speech, basically, for protesting what was going on in the schools there. So it was an elementary school, actually. And 10 of the individuals were actually charged with hate speech for speaking out against it. So some countries are more enthralled to this than others, but it's got a foothold in pretty much every Western country and many, many more besides. And as I document in the book, it's because of this web. And it's very convoluted, and it's difficult to follow because there are so many organizations and there's so much money going back and forth between these different organizations. And a lot of it's NGOs, but a lot of it's governments and a lot of it's corporations. And so they're all kind of in on it together. And the, you know, the more people voice that this is not a popular thing, people are not in general supportive of this, particularly as it comes to pushing it on children. Even people who are pretty open-minded, quote unquote, open-minded about the trans thing, understand that if someone, let's say, were to want to do something along these lines of, you know, a modified procedure or something, they should at least be an adult where they kind of knowingly enter into this. But as I say in the book, I mean, it really it is usually concurrent with other mental disorders. And so this is usually there's this, the concept of gender dysphoria, which is a mental illness, and it's usually intended with other mental illnesses as well. And as you find there's a lot of screaming about this so-called conversion therapy. And actually, the reason they are hitting on that point so much and so hard is because what they're promising is actually conversion therapy. They're basically saying, if you get this gender affirming care, as they call it, right? They use all these squishy euphemisms. They don't say the thing as the thing is, you know, this will fix your problem. You'll be in the body you're meant to be in. And this ignores the astronomical suicide rate, to say nothing of all the people who have come out and said that they regret doing the transition and all these other things. I mean, this is all swept under the rug, of course. And I didn't include a lot of personal testimony from people in the book because it's extremely thick. We actually had to shave about 100 pages out of it because we just wanted it to be somewhat affordable for people to get. That aspect, I think people can readily understand that. I wanted to get more into the networks. And also, like I said, even the history of it. Where does it come from? Who articulated this idea? Where did it originate? And then why is it being pushed? I touch on all those things in the book before sort of broadening out in the conclusion to, the intersections with a lot of other things that are going on along the, sort of one world sort of totalitarian agenda. Like this is an aspect of it, but it's I would say that it's all encompassing, in what they're trying to accomplish. So,
yeah. Yeah, it's a deep rabbit hole, huh? And you were just mentioning before there, and then we'll switch foot back. But you were mentioning the protests and stuff, and it is crazy, isn't it? I went to the Sydney protests. You would have seen what happened to people in Melbourne protesting the worst lockdowns in the world during the whole COVID psyop, last year. Particularly, everything's normal now. That's what they're telling you. just brutal. And I went to the Sydney ones. It's just wall-to-wall riot police. And there's families and kids there, who are just trying to stand up for themselves and their families and their communities and their jobs. And it's just, you just sit there, it's unbelievable. But the gay lesbian Mardi Gras in Sydney, that's given an open ticket. The Black Lives Matter protests, given an open ticket in Victoria, where police actually go on one bended knee, yet you go to protest your job and what's really important, and you cop it. So we know that. And I know a guy who sort of supports these movements, and I was looking at a video the other day that came out of Toronto, pretty sure it was in Canada, with the gay and lesbian parade, the Pride Parade there. And there's a guy, I don't know if you saw it, he's going down the street. There's children present, and he's got a Mickey Mouse thing on, and he's got his junk out, and he's flopping it around everywhere, in the middle of the day. And so that video was circulating, and it went up on our Telegram pages, and some other big ones, which was good. And so basically, a middle-aged guy, not too in shape, with Mickey Mouse kind of little tail on that, with his penis out, flopping it around in the middle of the day. And I said, how come that's okay? Because it's a pride march. But if you did that out front of a school in the park on the weekend, you'd be arrested in under 5 minutes, 2 minutes. Dads would be tackling you and holding you in a headlock until the police came, and it would be all over the news. People would be horrified. this is the thing, isn't it? Why is it, you know, and of course, you know, I wouldn't need to tell you about the kind of gay, lesbian Mardi Gras in Sydney. It would have to be bigger than San Francisco. I think it would be the biggest in the world. Some say Sydney's the hub for it. That's where I was born here, and it's, you know, it's live on ABC. The media just, they wet themselves over this, you know? I mean, it's just such a build-up and a push-up, and they talk to these people like they're superstars, and it's just... And really, you've got these homosexual men in leather kissing each other in front of children, and parents are taking their kids. It's such a, it's just a gross event that I don't support at all. But it's just so many families, for example, are getting suckered in, because if you say anything about that is not appropriate, then you're labeled all these names, like they would label you a racist or something, you know, and you're a gender phobia, and you're this and that. You're this terrible person because you've got your own opinion, and you're trying to say that this is not a good event and shouldn't be taking place. I have no problem with people who are just gay. If you want to be gay, live your bloody life. I don't care. We're all too busy, you know, but why do they have to keep displaying it like this? You know, it's absolutely insane. And, you know, you look at it and the TV coverage and the government support. And as you mentioned there, the amount of organizations, if you just go on in Australia and just type in LGBTQIA plus support services or whatever, it's an endless system. And in fact, they've got new support systems in Victoria where they're sending these people into schools to buddy up with young girls, for example, who they say might be confused, to kind of to get them to change their mind on their sexuality and everything. So they're sending these people into the schools now. Believe me, they're sending them in there to buddy up with kids, to kind of stalk them, to pretend that they're their friends. You know, it's really insidious. There's whole different packages here, and you can't get to the end of it. That's the thing. And there's so many different organizations and groups acting on behalf of this gay, lesbian, transgender, and equal sex community and LGBTQ mobs. But it's so massive and confusing and just huge. When you look at us, we don't have any of that. We're just everyday citizens having a family and doing our work and trying to keep our head above the water and exist and do the best we can in this life that we have, you know. And these people, it's just over the top, Scott. So what's your thoughts on that? Tell us a little bit about the, for example, these big gay pride movements that happen in our cities and towns, and unfortunately we see our communities and families take their kids there because they're being led to believe that this is a fun family event and it's all about you know, anti-bullying and all of this, and we have to support these people. They need our help, but they're not seeing the bigger picture here, are they? The machine behind this that's actually really running it.
Yeah, no, that's absolutely right. I mean, they don't see that. And I think that you hit on something where you're talking about the so-called buddies going into, you know, the schools and making friends with these young kids. And, you know, let's call it what it is. It's grooming, right? And you know, they're not just hearing them out and trying to dissuade them, let's say, right? It's almost certainly pushing in the other direction. excuse me. You know, and I think that that's really the crux of it, is that a lot of this has to do with getting the next sort of group in there. And, you know, there are major, major aspects where we can see, you know, through social media, through marketing, you know, on television, through the different prides, as you mentioned, you know, pretty much every major city has them, and it's the whole city essentially given over to this, you know, bacchanalia with, you know, just the worst excesses, and, you know, people walking around half naked and doing, you know, sexual acts and other things that, you know, nobody else, in no other context would anyone condone. I mean, that happens large scale. And you look at, you know, it's co-sponsored by, you know, Coca-Cola and, you know, whoever. So it's obviously, you know, these people act like they're, you know, fighting the power structure when they don't understand, or many of them, maybe they don't want to understand, but they're not fighting the power structure. They're being used to basically bludgeon the sort of regular, normal folks who just want to have a regular, normal country where they're not being, you know, attacked for their values and not having their kids preyed upon, not having the streets flooded with crime, and not having, you know, disgusting, inappropriate displays. You know, it doesn't matter if it's men, women, whatever. You know, it's just simply not appropriate to be around children. So sexuality, gender, and none of this stuff has any business being anywhere near these kids, to say nothing of the fact that, you know, the whole transgenderism thing, as I get in there, is basically a creation, sort of created in a lot of ways out of whole cloth less than 100 years ago. You know, there were some small precedents for what we could sort of see as the rudiments of it. Kind of in the late 19th century, there were a lot of ideas of it being, I shouldn't say a lot, but started to see sort of kernels of it in a nascent form. But as far as like an articulated concept, it's not an old thing at all. And it's a pure construct. And, you know, it occurs concurrently with a lot of the other cooking up of the social sciences and the invention of a lot of these things that we're dealing with today. So people talk about, you know, critical race theory being an issue, but a lot of these critical theories, it comes out of, you know, the Frankfurt School and a lot of these people, a lot of it coming out of Germany in the 1920s and a little bit into the 30s. And as those people are expelled from the country, a lot of them, most of them wind up in the U.S., although there is, as I mentioned in the book, a strong connection with communism, as sponsored as it goes into the USSR. And, you know, to this day, we still see a lot of that connection. But, you know, your sociologies, your psychologies, a lot of these things are basically co-opted by these critical theorists. And these disciplines are basically shaped to serve an ideological purpose. And so in that, understanding that, which I thought was very essential to point out, shows how the so-called gender ideology comes to be, because it turns into this, you know, culture of critique, if you will, where, you know, it is a constant sort of undermining of that, which is, you know, to use their language, heteronormative in the context of gender and sexuality. But it always forms an attack. And we have to ask ourselves, why is it that only things which attack us are being supported by those in power, are being financed by these individuals? And it doesn't matter if it's you know, sort of a Soros type figure, or if it's Goldman Sachs, or if it's, you know, whomever. It's coming from a variety of different directions. And a lot of these organizations and entities basically are sending money back and forth. And a lot of it is, I think, designed to make it very difficult to track what exactly is going on and who's doing what. But it's being advanced on all sides. And you mentioned COVID, and COVID is another aspect where we saw where, you know, it didn't matter if it was private industry or government or NGOs or whatever. Virtually everyone was on the same page. There's only one way to treat this. There's only one response to this. And so it's massive institutional support. And so I'm perplexed at times how people can't take a step back and go, hey, well, wait a second. Why is it that, you know, every major institution, organization, government, pretty much across the globe, you know, is basically saying, all right, well, you know, we're kind of on board with all this stuff. We're on board with you know, lockdowns. We're on board with pride parades. I mean, it's everywhere. Right. And there's just constant and consistent overlap as well. And you'll see, you'll be at the pride, there's all, you know, refugees, this, and, you know, these different things. And so they're constantly, and when I say they, I'm talking about the big they, right? The power structure is linking all these things together because they know that they're corrosive. And that's the point, right? You want to corrode and I talked about this a bit in the Open Society playbook, you want to corrode the foundations of the society. You want to undermine in order to basically break people apart, atomize them, and they turn like they're putty in your hands, and they'll do what you want them to do. And think about how many people sort of mindlessly went along with you know, the COVID agenda when it became obvious that it wasn't what it first looked like it might be. You know, you saw this right around the time that there were these, you know, racial protests across the globe for something that happened in, you know, in Minnesota. And it's just, you know, why are people in New Zealand marching, you know, for racial justice for something that happened in another country? It doesn't make any sense. But they were letting these people go out there supposedly in the middle of this horrible, deadly pandemic. So, you know, we're right to ask what exactly is going on here, right? And I think that that's the crux of it, is that we see this as being pushed in that fashion. I'm just about out of time. The wife's calling me.
You're right. Yeah, there's so much in there as well, isn't there? You could be here for hours going through just little bits and pieces of information. It's just absolutely incredible. It's amazing. You were talking about such early times there in Germany as well, because that's when Hitler was in, wasn't he? Around the 30s. So he may have had a hand in forcing this out, all these people out. I'm not sure.
Yes. Yeah. No. Absolutely.
1933. That was bad stuff coming. So the ideas were coming from there at that time, and so he would have been pushing that out, that whole system out, expelling it. Yeah.
Yeah. That's right. You know, they most of those people were expelled. You know, for the ideas that his party was basically saying, or this is corrosive to the society, and you know, we can't have it. And it's not coincidental that occurred alongside basically an economic breakdown, you know, the kind of which we're starting to see now with fuel prices and all these other things. And a lot of that's artificially induced scarcity, you know, because they're trying to put the pain to us again to make us more compliant and to get us on the same page about this sort of future, you know, society, world, one world, kumbaya, that they're trying to create. But it's, you know, it's not kumbaya. You know, it's where everything you do is tracked and traced, and dissent is not allowed, and that's, you know, precisely where we're finding ourselves. So it's the transgender thing is it's very important to understand, especially in regards to protecting children. But it's also important to understand as part of the in the context of this is one aspect of a larger battle, basically, that's shaping up, that involves basically you losing control of every aspect of say-so in your life, and handing it over to the powers that be, and they will coerce, cajole, bully, try all sorts of different scenarios and different things. You know, you see basically this sort of posturing about war in China, and the Russia thing and all this. And so it's like, okay, well, you know, if you won't bend our will with this, we'll try this, and then we'll try this, and then we'll start combining these things. And yeah, they're very sick. The people that are in power are very sick. And I think that's reflected in the fact that you see such debauchery allowed through the prism of these pride parades and just really disgusting displays. Because, you know, I think that they're in one of two camps. They're either amoral or they're immoral. And you know, the amoral ones enable the immorality. And I think that that's rampant. And I think that there is a perverse kick that some percentage of them, probably a fairly large percentage of them, get from trying to put the hurt on us. And they sit back and they laugh, you know, you know, we see civil unrest, and then you've got some idiot, you know, waving a dildo around, and, you know, and it's just, you know, and there's terror attacks and all the rest of it. And it's all just sort of hitting you again and again and again. And it's, you know, it's like I said, it's designed to basically, it's sort of like erosion, you know, just sort of wear you down eventually. Kind of mixing metaphors a little bit, because I was talking about putty earlier, but the point is just to get your resistance down so that, you know, you're a lot more compliant, and they can get you, you know, on board with this whole, you know, agenda.
And it definitely ties up with the transhuman agenda, doesn't it?
Yes, that's absolutely right.
And, transhuman and transgender agenda, and I think the COVID shots as well. I think it's all interconnected. I think they're wiping away basically what makes us all human and our kids human, to just have these, as you said, putty, so they can reshape and remold into this new future, the Great Reset. Yeah,
I'm very glad you mentioned that. I'll make this announcement here. I have not told or mentioned anything else, but that will be my next book.
Great. That's a big one. There's only a few talking about that, but it's absolutely connected. Absolutely. Transgender and transhuman is the one thing in my book, and that's what they're doing. Yeah.
Yes. Yep. I agree, and we'll have to do this again so we can talk about that, and I can
Yes, so that's to. you're going to work on writing that. That's exciting.
That's right. And Antelope Hill will publish that as well. And I'll get into the transhuman aspect, the COVID. Basically how those things all connect. That's exactly. I'm very thrilled you mentioned that, because that's absolutely where I'm headed next.
Oh, fantastic! So we'll be able to chat about that. When that comes out. And so the book we've been talking about today, of course, is The Transgender Industrial Complex by Scott Howard. I'll put it up on the website and put all your links in. I'm guessing the best place for folks to get it is Antelope Hill, just that website. I'll probably just link that in that's the best spot.
Yeah, get it direct through there, because support the shipping them as costs well. And the shipping will be lower. I think if you do that, if I'm not mistaken.
That's right. Well, great speaking to you today, buddy, and got your hands full there with a little one, and keeping busy. That's the important thing, isn't it? And fantastic to hear you're going to get another one out on such important and critical subjects there. So really exciting times for you there, and glad the book, this one's doing well, and we want to push it out here in Oz, and hopefully people can grab a copy and get into the book and get on side here and help support your kind of work and what we're trying to do here, and help help protect our children, our most vulnerable.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more, and I'm thrilled that you had me on. I'm always humbled that people want to talk to me about it, and I just greatly appreciate it. So
I know you don't have much time, but that's okay. I think we covered the bullet points, and I'll keep in contact with you, and we'll chat on the next one.
Yes, absolutely. I'd love that.
All right. You take care.
All right. We'll talk to you later. Thanks a lot.
Thanks, buddy. Thanks, mate.